this is a critical piece that's missing, I believe, for most teams and leaders, is we jump to solutioning on problems that we maybe don't understand fully or isn't the real thing that we need to be addressing. And it shows in things like burnout and employee engagement and some of the problems that are front and center for a lot of leaders and teams these days.
This is Leaderful, where we give you the models and the frameworks, the strategies and the skills that you need to drive true transformation for yourself, your team, your organization, and the world. Welcome to the show.
Pablo, welcome back to another episode of Leaderful. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you. It's been a while.
It has been a while, and I love your shirts. Those of you who are listening can't see it, but Pablo is decked out with some Christmas lights, Christmas light shirt, and so it's 'tis the season.
Yeah, I think I've worn it 3 times in the last 10 years, so it's special.
Nice, special occasion. I'm really excited about today's conversation because I think it's the missing ingredient in most of the initiatives and the projects that teams and leaders are trying to undertake to drive positive change in their organizations. Inevitably, when we get called in or we get the call to like, hey, can we talk about what's going on my team? We start asking questions about, well, how have you designed these interventions or these projects, and what discovery did you do? And did you get to a shared understanding and definition of the problems? And so I'm alluding to a 5D framework that we're going to talk about today that we use when we come alongside clients to help them get to the place of positive impact, right? And so I think all of us, I know myself as a leader, I've been super guilty of just like playing whack-a-mole. I think we've talked about that on the podcast before, where it's like this burnout problem or this employee retention and engagement problem. And I'm trying to figure out, how do I like keep it good enough to have some sense of security or some sense of normalcy. And I've been guilty of not going a layer deeper or a few layers deeper into what's really happening here. And how do we do this in a way that brings our team alongside us and engages them in the process, as opposed to throwing them into a training or throwing them into a new process that we've designed that is fundamentally misaligned from what they actually need and care about underneath. And so with that, let's maybe dig into the 5D framework. I'll toss it over to you to maybe give us a high level overview of that, and then we can spend a little bit of time on each of the components so that the listener can, as you prep for 2023, the assumption here is you're listening to this in early January 2023, you can walk away from this episode with some clarity around, okay, this is how I should go about approaching some of these things in the organization. So Pablo, 5Ds, what are they, and go.
Yeah, so the 5Ds, we have, and we'll go into detail in a bit here, but ultimately discovery, so getting curious, finding out what do I know about this from their perspective or that perspective. There's then, once we've done some discovery, getting clearer on defining the problems, the pain points, or what we like to flip and call the opportunities, the most meaningful ones. So really getting clear and defining those. And then, you know, moving to design. Now that we have a clear articulation of these opportunities, how might we, you know, approach them, navigate, solve? Then we've got the delivering the designed project, initiative, campaign, or actions we said we would take, and implementing them. And then we have debrief. We try to use D's as much as possible, which is checking in. What have we learned? What might we need to adjust, change, stop? Like, maybe we've already learned the lesson and it's done. And so for anybody who's familiar with the methodologies of agile, lean, design thinking, there's parts of that that obviously we've been inspired by and have included into this iterative model for meaningful work. And so just like maybe what we can do next, Jeff, is like just some considerations around, you know, what the 5Ds is meant to represent. And so I'll pass it back over to you, and then that'll give me time to
sure. Yeah, I mean, I think the reason why it's evolved in our work to be this way, and it continues to evolve, it's something that we're always playing with to figure out, is this meeting the needs? Is this having the impact that it needs to have for the team? And that's fundamentally what it comes down to, is the intention impact gap, which listeners will hear us talk about quite a bit. You know, leaders and teams have good intentions about solving problems or chasing opportunities in their organization for their end users or clients. And the impact often is misaligned with that initial intention, or that often unspoken or unknown intention. And so part of this process is surfacing intentions. It's bringing those to the surface so we can gather around them as a team and say, yeah, that's the thing, right? We all agree that that's the thing. And actually, you and I were just in a room with a client this week where we started with six different problem statements, right, that have emerged from a discovery process. And the process this week was, let's define that so we all know what we're getting ourselves into and we all have the shared priority. So it's about shared priority, I would say, on the front end. And too often, like you said, you know, what do we know about this from their perspective? The answer is usually nothing, right? When I ask myself, what do I know about this from the perspective of a frontline employee or someone, you know, in this department, I don't know anything. I've got a lot of assumptions about what I think I know. And so the discovery process is really meant to unearth those assumptions and to get all of the perspectives, or as many as we can, as much data as we can in the system, collect all of the dots so that we can then connect them in a meaningful way. And so those two, I think, are probably often a missed step. Often we jump too far and we jump into we think we know what the problem is. And so we start to chase that problem and we see behavior like, well, we just need a training on X, Y, or Z, right? Pick your topic. And so when we think about something like burnout, you know, we just finished up a boundaries before burnout program. And too often something like burnout, you know, the leader's perspective of that is that people need some rest, or they need a day off, or they need something, a team day, or they need, like, they'll jump to solutioning, we call it, right, too quickly, right? And then they'll go and take action and they'll hire a trainer to come in and do a workshop on something. And meanwhile, the staff team is sitting there like, wait a minute, like, why am I here? How does this solve my problem? How does this address the thing that's really going on? So we want to avoid that, because not only is that not helpful, that type of behavior where we jump to solutioning too quickly, it is actually damaging, right? So we'll see employees, and I've been there myself, where I roll my eyes a little bit at the next initiative or the next project or the next thing that comes down the pipe, because I know that the last couple didn't meet my needs in a meaningful way. And so we start to actually move the needle in the wrong direction with team engagement and team sense of support for the team. And so I don't know if that was what you were looking for, but a little bit of, like, we're trying to avoid that the pain points that are associated with jumping too quickly to thinking we know what is the real need, and then designing and delivering some sort of project or initiative inside of our team or organization.
Yeah, I would say the 5 Ds has helped us make sense of where we are in the journey of the work with our clients, and also to bring them along. Mm-hmm. It's also been a great way to come back and ground ourselves and, have we done enough here? Do we need to jump back to a little bit more discovery to actually dig deeper into this signal or thing that we're hearing, but we don't, like, we have a lot of assumptions about, but really haven't heard from, you know, the people that it's impacting. I would say, you know, when I think about the 5 Ds, this, you know, model for meaningful work, I would say one thing, the value for me anyways, when I look at the work we do with our clients, is getting there faster and more meaningful. Because it's not like, you know, without the model, you, like, eventually the organization might get there after running so many experiments, they get down to the deep rooted problems. And for us, we want to dig down deep at the beginning, right? What may be the most meaningful, impactful problems or opportunities for us to focus in on? Do we all have a shared understanding of that? And by actually bringing everybody along who's going to impact that, you don't have people, you know, rowing the boat in different directions. You don't have influential members who might have been with an organization for a long time who have said, like, this is why I started here, this is what I value most, and now you're telling me it's all wrong, right? Like, they haven't been part of that journey to actually see, oh, wow, this is the problem we're trying to solve is maybe different than what we originally started off with. So it's a great, I would say, way to bring people together to create shared understanding, some alignment and buy-in, and then, like, activation. What are the roles that we're each going to play in doing this? And this is not like, here's the thing I actually want to stress with the 5 Ds, is these things can be happening at all times in different parts of your business, right? It's not this linear process. I know as human beings, we like to check boxes and
have a Gantt chart that says I'm going to do discovery this week and then I'm going to move to this. Yeah,
exactly. And so that's the value, I think, of what we do, because we come in there and I think we're trying to change the perception and the value of consultants, right? I know we offer coaching and training and facilitation, but I have been a consultant where I've come in and I'm like, did I really help? Right? Or will this be another problem next year? And so I think the 5 Ds helps us to really dig deep down and have meaningful conversations about meaningful things.
Yeah, it's an accountability mechanism as much for us as it is for, as a pathway for the client to make meaningful difference, make a meaningful difference in their system. I'm also in the same boat. I've ended projects with clients and been like, did we actually, was that the problem that we should have been solving for? Is that the thing? And I think, you know, what stands out to me is that the discovery and the definition phases are really where consultants can help move the needle, because we hear things from organizations from within the organizations that have never been surfaced before, or only kind of come out sideways over beers on Friday night, you know, that type of, and that's power dynamics. And we talk about that a lot here at the Ally Co around understanding and navigating power dynamics. But sometimes if HR is trying to do discovery, I mean, you've been in that role before, and so maybe I could pass it back to you about like what some of the challenges are when you're a part of the system, trying to learn about the system in a meaningful way, that you never can quite get to the root of it. And that's especially true, I think, of things like psychological safety, or if there's conflict or tension in an organization, it's really can be quite challenging to get to. But, you know, your experience as an HR practitioner, people and culture leader, and as a consultant, the difference in approach, especially on the front end, that discovery phase, thoughts?
Yeah, I always see the struggle with organizations wanting to do that themselves, right? Like, I remember I worked for one of the best workplaces in Canada. It was such an amazing experience. And, you know, I remember us having conversations about like, yes, we're known for this type of work, but should we be doing that own work ourselves? Like, is that a hat I should be wearing in my role? And until I met you and started to, you know, understand more about power dynamics and types of power, I didn't see, I wasn't aware, right, of the, you know, especially if you are an HR leader who has moved up in the organization, where you might have been at an equal par level power with most of your colleagues, and now all of a sudden, because of a title change, a role change, or accountability change, you are in an up power position, and therefore that relationship has changed, right? The power dynamics are different. And so, I mean, I don't know if this is a surprise for anybody, but as consultants, people tell us more than they would otherwise tell, you know, their bosses, their leaders, or their HR folks. And so I do think that there's a role for external parties like allies such as us to really gather that data. I think the other feedback we've received too is the way that we hold on to that data in a confidential and protective way allows people to share more. Because ultimately the goal is to get that organization to a place where those conversations are happening openly. You know, we talk to so many leaders that are so afraid or conscious of what people are saying, you know, in the back channels. And you know, it's like, well, first of all, they're probably not talking as much as you think about you, and it's probably something different. But wouldn't you rather have those conversations out in the open, right, where assumptions can be cleared, where solutions can be co-created to have the actual impact they're intended to have, right? Like, wouldn't you – we do that with our clients, where, you know? Mm-hmm. So anyways, I guess my whole ramble there was, you know, being conscious that not every job in this space of collecting feedback perspective can be done by the internal organization. You need help.
Yeah. Yeah. And then once you have that information, oftentimes there's still a process of defining, or that's the next step, right? So we've done some discovery, and that can look like impact surveys. That's one tool that we use. We'll also do one-on-one interviews with key stakeholders or representation, depending on the size of the organization, you know, sample groups that, you know, belong to a kind of persona, or, you know, the more classic like type of employee that we have, or level of system, or all of those different things go into getting a good, robust discovery. Then we get to the place of definition. Like, what does this data mean? And this is where there's some traps too, I think, for leadership teams. And I know I've been guilty of that, where I look at a set of data, I look at the engagement survey, and I start to pick out what's meaningful to me. It's like, ooh, that's really pinchy. And so that draws my attention. Or, hey, it actually says we're doing really well here, so I'm going to just focus on that, and I'm going to dismiss this other pinchy feedback. You know, there's a lot of that sorting, filtering based on what we care about as leaders, or where our sense of maybe at risk or fear might be in the system. And so sometimes we will lose that in the definition process, and we'll just, you know, I hear this from employees where it's like, yeah, the employee engagement survey is just a checkbox exercise to say that we were consulted, but leadership's going to do whatever they want anyway. They've already got their roadmap and their budget, and they're like, this is just a checkbox type activity. We really want to obviously avoid that. And I think most leaders would want to avoid that, because that doesn't actually help us close that gap between our intention and our impact. When it comes to defining problems, what are some approaches, or what's a way that we can kind of think about that as a leader. How do we get to maybe more of the root problem as opposed to some of the surface level things or our own favorite things that we want to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of great tools and models out there to help you dig deeper. You know, I think, where do I start? One thing I would say is make it collaborative, right? We talk about diversity, inclusion. We talk about people feeling included, learning together in their way through failure, mistakes even. We talk about being able to contribute and to challenge. And I think when we're thinking about like, how do we dig deep down into those problems, like those things have to happen, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not one person sitting in a room digging down on their own to what the problem may be based on their own truths and their experiences. Though that is valuable, it needs to be understood in the bigger system, right? Yep. So, you know, everybody's heard of the five whys, I'm assuming, or a lot of us have, and that's still a good
one.
That's an assumption.
There's probably people that haven't that are listening. Like, what do you mean?
But now you will after hearing this. You might Google it.
So instead of having you Google the five whys, I thought I would do that for you. And I would just jump into this conversation during the editing process and describe what we're talking about here when we talk about a five whys exercise. And the five whys was first popularized by Toyota Motor Corporation. I don't know exactly when, but they used it as a technique to look at the root cause or the cause and effect relationship beneath a particular problem. There's been some critiques of this model. It's not as robust a root cause analysis as some other methodologies and frameworks that are out there, but as a first go at getting beneath surface level problems into what is driving that problem, what's connected to that problem, it's really quite effective. And so I'll use the example here that's on Wikipedia because it's a great, pretty straightforward, and it goes along with the automotive theme, which is the history of the five whys exercise. And so if we take a problem like our vehicle won't start, why isn't it starting? And maybe the answer is the first why is that the battery is dead. But then we ask, well, why is the battery dead? We might find that the alternator, the thing that charges the battery, isn't functioning properly. And so that would be the second why. If we ask, well, why is the alternator not functioning? We get to a place of, well, it's actually broken. The belt broke. And if we ask why, and we might find that the alternator belt was beyond its useful service life and hadn't been replaced because it wasn't being maintained according to the recommended service schedule. And so the fifth why, you know, from the vehicle not starting is the owner isn't maintaining it according to the schedule. And of course, we could go to a sixth or seventh or eighth why, and we could start to dig into the barriers maybe that owner faces, right? Maybe the shop doesn't have good hours and they can't get his car in on the weekend, or he can't afford the service and how much it costs, or she, you know, decides that she's going to put that money, you know, it's just totally an affordability thing and we can't put that investment into the vehicle, right? So there's lots of things we can keep going. We can keep asking whys, but we can, as we see with that example, when we start with the vehicle won't start and we get down to what's not actually being maintained properly, there's lots of different places in that system that we can redefine the problem and approach it from a different way so that we're not always chasing symptoms. Because oftentimes we start with symptoms and they're pretty high level. You know, the vehicle won't start. That could be a lot of different things. And so we actually have to get beneath the surface there. And most leaders and most teams stop at the surface. We stop at our team is burnt out, or we're losing employees, or we can't retain people, or people don't want to come into the office, or whatever the symptom is of these deeper underlying problems. Highly recommend that you define that problem as concretely as you can, which we'll talk about here in a little bit, and then do some sort of deeper dive, whether that's the five whys exercise or some other type of root cause analysis. All right, back to Pablo and I.
It's an oldie but a goodie, I would say. But how you go through the five whys, I believe that's where you can have some, different approaches to doing it. I think, you know, we borrow a lot from the design thinking approach of, who is this problem impacting? What is the problem that is actually happening? Where is it happening? When is it happening? How might it be happening? And then why does this matter? Like, why should we care about this? Right. And you can even add it later to the whys, like, why is this important or highly impactful to the individuals, the who, to the organization, to our clients? You can start to think about the ecosystem that's there to really understand why does this matter? Why should we focus on it? Mm-hmm. But I think the five whys, you know, that's always a good one because we tend to, as human beings, focus on things we can see and easily make sense of at the surface. And so the five whys, and then really articulating it with a statement that's clear and concise, makes it easier for people to understand, challenge, contribute to, and have meaningful conversations around. And so, you know, that experience though, like, it sounds easy. Oh yeah. Boom. Write that out. Go through five whys. But we did a session the other day with six leaders, and I think it took us 2 hours, and that was a sprint, just to get to an area of like maybe third layer down or fourth layer down. And so I think you need to create space to have conversations as people are thinking through that. And it's less about the perfection of the statement, because I think we can get caught up in that. And so bullet points, use bullet points. Maybe that's a cool tip.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wrestling with the data and the sense that we've made of that data to get to a place of shared understanding. And I like the five whys. Like you said, it's an oldie but a goodie. And we did it in this session. We did it in a different way that I actually haven't done it before. And we had people rotate around these different problem statements. So we had six leaders, six initial problem statements up on the board, start with the top, things like lack of role clarity as an example, right? And then as it individually, they just walked around the room. We gave them a few minutes to dig that layer deeper. And so we ended up getting each leader having some input on each problem. And I think it really helped get that sense of shared understanding or the sense of collaboration on this problem, because the danger, of course, is that a leader or someone with power will take that away and they'll do their own five whys, and they'll spit something out and people will just nod their heads in agreement, but they haven't actually engaged with that problem in a meaningful way. They haven't had their input. Their perspective isn't yet shared. So I loved seeing different handwriting, different colored pens on all of these different sheets, because it meant the team did that together. And I think one of the things that's most important about coming out of the definition phase before we head into design is that shared sense of, yes, we agree that this is the thing that we're tackling, because that lack of agreement, if there's a little bit of tension around, no, I still don't think that's the thing, anything that comes out of that is going to be, there's going to be easy for a leader to step back and say, well, I didn't think that was the problem we were needed to solve in the first place. And I think we really need to avoid that in organizations.
Yeah, you know, I've seen, so when I've facilitated some of those sessions, I've seen another outcome as well, where there really is a difference of perspective in what the actual problem is. And so it's not like we have to sit in the room until someone gets tired and says, finally, yeah, I agree, let's do that. No, why don't we test both of those out? Right? That's the beauty of this, right? If there is that, usually we find alignment. And at least running an experiment to validate some of those assumptions or strengthen that definition. But sometimes I've seen like A and B, let's A and B test this. How might that look like? How will we collect data? At which point do we make a decision? Maybe there are actually two problems here that if we concurrently approach them will help us, you know, from a larger impact. So I'd say that openness, I think, you know, when you're doing this work, there's this, just the openness, to know that, to remove all constrictions. We talk about divergence when we're doing this work. I think the definition, while it allows us to converge and get very clear about a problem, like if it feels wrong at one point, we can just re-diverge and move to another. So that's something important, that there is a bit of structure, but it doesn't mean, oh, we've committed to this thing, we got to keep doing it till the end.
Totally. Yeah. And that leads us into a conversation about design, probably. So once we have a statement or a couple of what we think are the roots, or at least the level of system and the impact and feasibility, like there's all of that conversation has to happen, because just because you identify a problem doesn't mean we're going to rush out to solve it, because we may not have the budget, the resources, the time, like whatever that is. So there's a prioritization exercise there that says, yeah, this is a thing that we can bite off in the first quarter or the first half of the year or whatever. And then we lead into design, which is the, how might we, right? How might we actually solve this problem? Like, what are the different pathways? Like, is this a simple problem that has a recipe that we can follow? Is this a complex problem where we need to actually circle back and do some more discovery, right? Where we need to just do something and see how the system reacts to it, right? Because we don't know for sure. There's lots of, I think, things that can go into the design process, and that's probably its own separate episode. You know, how do we do each of these could easily be their own separate conversation. So at a high level, and I'll try and keep it a high level, designing, what does that look like? And should we think about, now that we've defined something, stepping into our designer roles and saying how might we solve this, or how might we move this in a meaningful way?
Yeah, there's a couple, like, two of the ways that I've really enjoyed doing this is we have this problem statement and we flip it into an opportunity statement, which, you know, which could be as easily as adding another sentence to say the opportunity here is to whatever it is. The other, some people might have heard of the how might we statements, and it's like how might, and so here you can do a very collaborative ideation session where you get different perspectives on like, is everybody clear on this problem we have? And maybe it's about inviting people that haven't been part of the definition to actually test its strength. Like, does it make sense? Is it clear? Do they have questions about it? You know, this is your opportunity to have a more meaningful conversation and strengthen it up. Right. When you flip it, you have them flip. What's the opportunity here and come up with these different ideas? You know, that's all the how might we approach this or how might we approach this? That's a great one. There's a design challenge statement you can write. That's from human-centered design thinking. But the exciting part is this is all about ideation and exploring the different ways we might approach the problem. And from there, you start to design, okay, so if that, you know, if we're going to do it this way, what would success look like? How will we know that we're headed in the right direction, that we've learned something here? And I think working back, we start to then, this is a project. I think too many people and teams don't treat it as a project, and therefore it doesn't show up, whether it's on budgets or operationally, it's not talked about at a larger organizational level. And so it can just fizzle out, lose energy, or be seen as it's not a priority. So I would say make it a project. And we've got a great Spurs model. I don't know if we've done a podcast on what Spurs is, but to really capture the power behind a project, identifying roles, the urgency of it, the scope of it, the rhythms for the team, like all those things can start to come together as you design the project.
Yeah, totally. We'll carve that out as a separate podcast sometime in the next couple of months. We'll sit down and dig into that, or maybe we'll get some designers on. That's probably what we'll do, is we'll get some guests on that do the specific design. I know we know some folks, and we have some members of the team that we could actually engage in that conversation too. So let's park that for a second. The delivery actually is pretty straightforward at the end of the day. It should be pretty straightforward, but there's a few key ingredients that I think about when I think about delivery is the real world nature of it. Real time, real world, like let's make sure that we're actually oriented to solving the problem and we're not kind of getting off track or we're getting too abstract or theoretical, right? There's a team-based aspect of delivering things, right? Is the system level, right? How is the team engaged in this? And so from a learning and development perspective, which is one way to approach growth or impact in an organization, it means probably not taking an individual leader and shipping them off to something that they need to change and grow some skills and then expecting them to come back and change the system. It's let's slow that down and let's take the whole team through a process, right? And team learning, I think, is more effective. And I think that in this hybrid world of work, then this remote world of work, that's becoming more and more evident that it's a team thing that needs to occur there. And then action oriented, right? Are we actually taking action in the learning, in the consulting, in the coaching, whatever it is that we're doing to help move this system? It has to be that, action oriented in the moment and kind of skill. Like, are we building the awareness, the willingness, and the skill to keep moving this problem forward? The last piece is the debrief. And so when you think about the benefits of a debrief, and I actually think it's a missing ingredient. It's a missing ingredient for us. I don't think we take the time to always debrief as thoroughly as we could to learn and to affect change for the next iteration of this. This really is a loop that we need to affect. But when you think about debriefing, what's a low-hanging fruit for a team to do a bit more of the debriefing on this process?
I mean, the low-hanging fruit is just build it in as a milestone key activity of the project, and not necessarily at the end. Right? We always think debrief is at the end, but debrief could be continual rhythms of feedback. I would say debrief, even though we have it in our model at the end, and yes, there should be this kind of transition into the next thing or sharing of learning. But what I think debrief, more importantly, should be built into all of those pieces. And that's why it's kind of this iterative system, asking regularly for feedback for the people that are running the project, responding to that feedback in a timely manner, right? Requesting specific feedback about, in case it's not clear, the things you are trying to impact, they should be. And then also there's like, how do we empower and have some accountability on the people that we are creating this for to share feedback, to speak up, right? So I would say within the realm of communication, I would say that's a huge characteristic of great debrief.
Yeah. Awesome. So in a nutshell, 5 D's, we've got a discovery phase where we're learning about the system. We're collecting as much information and data as we can. We have a definition phase where we're getting really clear on the problem and the opportunity, a shared understanding of that. We move into design, which is the how might we, and you know, what are some of the constraints and how do we navigate that, and really building a meaningful in project or initiative. And then we get into the delivery, which in an ideal world is team-based, it's real world and real time, and it's action oriented. And then I love your point on debriefing. That should be an ongoing process. It should be feedback mechanisms built in. And then there is probably room for postmortems, you know, those where we actually sit down with the team and say, okay, this initiative is done. The training is over. What did we learn? And what are we going to do different next time? And we are going to dig into the 5 D's over the next month or two. And actually we're queuing up an opportunity for the community to engage in some of that in real time with some real data as we go. And so we'll stay tuned for that. We'll be launching a culture survey for the community in the coming weeks. And so stay tuned for some of those communications, because I think this is a critical piece that's missing, I believe, for most teams and leaders, is we jump to solutioning on problems that we maybe don't understand fully or isn't the real thing that we need to be addressing. And it shows in things like burnout and employee engagement and some of the problems that are front and center for a lot of leaders and teams these days. Anything to add, Pavel, before we wrap today's conversation?
I'll just say, you know, for our listeners, you know, the new year's coming, and with that comes a lot of great intentions. And so I would say reach out, because if anything, if you can get budget for anything, I would say do a discovery, work with a team, hopefully ours, to really collect and capture all the dots before you try to connect them and implement something. And even that, even if you can carve out budget to say, hey, what if, like, as a proof of concept, or to show, here's where we think the most value and impact is, you know, based on this small, like, you have this information now to make you can make a decision that's informed, right? And, you know, if you're feeling like you're in a position of down power, discovery work is a very powerful way to show, like, this is the need, this is the impact. How can you say no to this?
Leaderful is brought to you by The Ally Co., a team of human-centered, systems-conscious consultants, coaches, and facilitators dedicated to helping you and your team tackle the core problems of burnout and stuckness and misalignment and misuses of power and all of the things that get in the way of creating truly human-centered workplaces where everyone thrives and does their best work. Head over to www.theallyco.world to learn more.